Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
In breaking news, the International Court of Justice has ordered Israel to take all necessary and effective action to prevent a further deterioration of the catastrophic living conditions of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, in their words. The judges said Palestinians in Gaza are no longer facing only a risk of famine, but that famine is setting in, as they called for urgent action to prevent mass starvation. However, we spoke with Israeli government spokesman David Mentzer yesterday on this programme, and he denied there was an aid crisis in Gaza, saying they are flooding Gaza with aid. Here's a reminder of what he said.
Before this war, there were 70 food trucks a day going in. Yesterday, there were 274 of those trucks. Now, look, we are trying to flood Gaza with aid. We have no interest in causing any harm to ordinary civilians. No, well, of course it's disputed. There's a war going on.
It's disputed by all of the aid agencies, and it's disputed by the US as
well. Let me tell you that, you know, unfortunately, the main aid agency in Gaza was UNRWA, and UNRWA were, of course, a front for Hamas.
I'm joined now, that's David Mentzer from the Israeli government, their spokesperson. I'm joined now from Gaza by UNICEF's chief spokesperson, James Elder. James, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Cormac.
What's your reaction to that?
Look, I can only go with numbers. We've got, and of course, eyes on the ground, what I see. Okay, what I see when I drive through the north past the final checkpoint and you see tens of thousands of people on the street putting their hand to their mouth in that universal, I'm hungry. Look, when I go to hospitals and the malnutrition wards are full of paper thin children with mothers who have done everything they can. And these are children who get to hospitals. Or when we look at the most respected body in the world who looks at malnutrition crises, showing that Gaza has the largest percentage of a population anywhere to receive that body's most severe rating in its two decades of being alive. So, look, no one wants to go tit for tat, but truth matters, life-saving aid matters, and we are desperately short of it. That's why mothers are now not only trying to protect their children from bombardments that I continue to hear as you and I speak, Cormac, but from starvation.
The Israeli spokesperson, as you heard, said Israel is trying to flood Gaza with aid. So how many trucks of aid are getting through every day?
Look, I could talk. Honestly, I couldn't tell you what got in yesterday. I could tell you an average, but an average of over the last 6 months is one third the number of trucks has got in that needs to get in, one third. What we should also speak to is where trucks come in. So if there is a sincere effort to flood the Gaza Strip with aid, one of the first things you would do, if not the first thing, is open crossings in the north, because it's the north where, Cormac, those people are that I say, gaunt-looking faces, hands to mouth, children desperately malnourished. There are entry points, old crossings in the north that are 10 or 15 minutes from those people desperately in need. Not this one crossing down here, which can take 5 hours through hundreds of thousands of people. The dangers of that, mostly to the people we're passing in trucks. So open those entry points would be a sincere effort to ensure we don't have this crisis.
James, we spoke to you last week after your visit to Kamal Adwan, that the hospital in the north of Gaza, where more than 23 children reportedly died from malnutrition and dehydration. Today, a top UN court has ordered Israel to allow aid into Gaza. They're saying now that it's no longer a risk that famine might come, that famine is setting in. If I was where you are in Gaza now, what would I witness?
Huh, what you'd hear, I mean, I'm in the south. I went to the middle area today. I went to hospitals. What you'd witness is hospitals that, Cormac, imagine every corridor in a hospital with thousands of people in it, where half the corridor is sheltered off with blankets and tenting to try and give people protection. A family who used to have a 3-4-bedroom family home now have 9 people in 15 by 10 feet. And where children walk past and there's a new child today with an amputation, there's another one. Thousands of people in a hospital. So you'd witness that. If you were here right now where I am, you'd look to the sky and you'd see drones and you might hear that. You'd hear that thunderous explosion, which is probably 500-600 metres away. This is your orchestra. This is the soundtrack of Gaza night after night for families here, day after day, to be honest.
What do people look like? Could there be any doubt that people are starving?
In the south, you know, there is absolutely, there is food. You see small markets in the south here. The challenge here, of course, is also born on poverty. People are eating one meal a day based on that they have all lost jobs and homes, and there's a great lack of food. So you've now got, you know, these nutritional crises based on poverty. In the north, no, there can be no doubt. There can be no doubt what you see in the north. And I've been to the north many times now in terms of when you see people standing on the rubble street after street. By seeing their face, there can be no doubt. It speaks to, as I say, the most respected nutritional body on the planet and the catastrophic decline that Gaza has made, or Gazans have made, into this imminent famine.
And in terms of the aid trucks being checked by Israeli soldiers, how restrictive are the checks? What kind of checks are happening at this point at the gates?
Well, they can be arbitrary, you know. Even for, say, for UNICEF, when we get aid from a warehouse, until it gets to the child, it's going on and off trucks four different times. Not sure if you can hear those explosions. It's an important point, so I'll answer your question. But it's very important that we make clear that aid is not getting to people and why it needs to. But it's also very clear that ever since that ceasefire declaration, this bombardment of people cannot be normalised. This atrocious killing of children day after day goes on and on. But yeah, Cormac, the checks are. They can be ad hoc, it can be arbitrary denials, you're not even sure, there can be something on a truck, what they call dual usage, that they don't want, so therefore the entire truck is turned back. There's not always great clarity to it. I can certainly tell you that of UN convoys in the first 3 weeks of March, one quarter of those were denied. That's our numerical record. So that's how that playing field looks. But as I say, it's important to also remember, as we seek to get aid in, and it's a very difficult operating environment too. People in forced desperation are being killed while they are receiving aid. And certainly I've had more United Nations colleagues killed in this war than any other war in the history of the United Nations. It's a difficult place to distribute aid.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to ask you about that, actually, because you're in Gaza at the moment. Hopefully you'll get out. At least you're eligible to get out. As you listen to the explosions around you in Gaza, how traumatizing is it for the people who cannot get out of there?
Cormac, it's heartbreak, right? It's just, there will be an immense sadness and guilt I feel when I leave here. When I lie in bed night after night and your building shakes from a bomb, I don't have a military background, but some of the size of these bombs and your building shakes and the glass rattles. And I just think night after night, and I just think of those children lying out there. It doesn't matter if you're in a tent or a home, but, you know, I've been back in Gaza this time for 2 weeks. I've had this for 4 or 5 months, night after night, where you have absolutely no certainty as that mother and child goes to bed that they will wake up in the morning. So when it comes to the mental health of kids, what they are enduring, and I do see this in their faces, and we're in uncharted territory for boys and girls here. And the recovery is not even close because, as you can hear, the bombardments will continue tonight. So utterly devastated childhood, and I don't quite know how they continue, but I do know we are starting to see people's hope absolutely dissipate, and I understand why, I hate to say.
Really, what can be done at this point, do you think? Which crossing needs to be open? How many of them?
Yeah, several things. The ceasefire is the umbrella. The ceasefire solves so much. The ceasefire means that you can start to flood aid if there is still the willingness to open these entry points. Ceasefire means hostages get home, you end the torment. And ceasefire, as I say, means that hospitals are not full of children with the grotesque injuries of war. But in the north, there's two clear ones. Erez was an old crossing point in the far north, 15 minutes from where the places I'm talking, Cormac. Karni is another one. There's multiple crossing points that can be opened in the same way that this imminent famine is man-made. With the right decisions by men, it can be reversed.
Yet we know that there will be an Israeli delegation going to Washington, and on the agenda will be the ground invasion of Rafah, and Tel Aviv is insistent that the ground invasion will happen at this point. They say to annihilate the remaining battalions of Hamas that are hiding in Rafah, is the way they put it. If that were to happen, James, how would that exacerbate the humanitarian situation and the list of fatalities that we have at the moment?
Yeah, it would be catastrophic, mostly because we've never seen an orderly movement of people in the areas. Remembering that If you've got now an additional 1.3, 1.4 million people in Rafah, they need somewhere to go. Such has been the devastation of water systems, of sanitation systems, of ability to access food. It's never quite answered well in terms of where's the humane ability to move people into this if there was a military offensive here. If you sanitate, we are at that area that we feared for a long time, Cormac, whereby disease and malnutrition, we see deaths on the ground as we do coming from the sky. The numbers speak for themselves. A toilet per 800 people, a shower per 3,500 people. If you want to move another 1.5 million people, I simply don't know where. The services are not possibly there beyond the psychology of what people have endured, beyond the old people, beyond the babies in incubators, beyond the children who've had amputations who are in hospitals, beyond. It becomes catastrophic. But you're right. It sounds as if the conversations are very much that the catastrophe is being scripted.
Okay, look, James Elder of UNICEF, thank you very much indeed for talking to us from Gaza this evening.
Thanks, Cormac.